The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Secure the template. Set the backside guide to appropriate lock set basket. The backside guide tabs include setting the jig. Possessing template. What the hell am I reading?
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Capello.
You did not!
Oh, sorry, is this a 5-minute argument or the full half hour?
Oh, just the 5-minute one.
Fine. Thank you. Anyway, I did.
You most certainly did not.
Now, let's get one thing quite clear. I most definitely told you.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
Didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, this isn't an argument.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's just contradiction.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
It is not.
It is. You just contradicted me.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you did.
No.
You did just
now. No, nonsense.
Oh, look, this is futile.
No, it isn't.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. You came here for an argument.
Well, an argument's not the same as contradiction.
Can be.
No, it can't. An argument is a collective series of statements to establish a definite proposition.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It isn't just contradiction.
Look, if I argue with you, I must take up a contrary position.
But it isn't just saying no, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. Argument's an intellectual process. Contradiction is just the automatic gainsaying of anything the other person says.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
Not at all.
Now, look, I...
Thank you.
What?
That's it. Morning.
I was just getting interested.
Sorry, the 5 minutes is up.
That was never 5 minutes just now.
I'm afraid it was.
No, it wasn't.
Sorry, I'm not allowed to argue anymore.
What?
If you want me to go on arguing, you'll have to pay for another 5 minutes.
But that was never 5 minutes just now. Oh, come on. This is ridiculous.
I'm very sorry, but I told you I'm not allowed to argue unless you pay.
Oh, all right. There you are.
Thank you.
Well?
Well, what?
That was never 5 minutes just now.
I told you I'm not allowed to argue unless you paid.
I just paid.
No, you didn't.
I did! I did! I did! Look, I don't want to argue about that.
Well, I'm very sorry, but you didn't pay.
Aha! Well, if I didn't pay, why are you arguing? Gotcha.
There you haven't.
Is that? If you're arguing, I must have paid.
Not necessarily. I could be arguing in my spare time.
I've had enough
of this. All aboard!
Yeah.
Is that you, Tom?
It's me.
Well, who's that?
Who's what?
Who's that over there?
That's Mr. Cantola over there. You know what I mean?
That's a long beginning of history, isn't it?
I fell for that.
Oh, yeah. Not like a good straight man. The Bard of Broadcasting and the Clown Prince of Partners, Savino Cotolo Chronicles here, Y2K Plus 13. Philosophical entertainment, relevant, irreverent, netterized, high couple surface, netaholics, and infomaniacs remain curious yellow. We're going to be talking your brains off. Tom sits there taking notes. He's taking notes. It's just great. I can see you. You can't see me. This is great. I like this. Well, you know, it's like Alex the Parrot said. You be good. See you tomorrow. I love you. No, but it's true. It's true. It's a Y2K Plus 13. I forgot the date already. 19th of September. Tom Savino's here with me.
Hey, everybody.
And we're going to be here for quite a while. Although it's going to go by real quickly. Stay with us. We got a lot to talk about and all the things we don't even know we're going to talk about in the middle of it. Cotolo Chronicles, now in 7 different languages across the globe. Not kidding either. Take it away.
冰球到冰球,小村到大市, 咸湿屋仔到咸湿中心, 是 Cotolo Chronicles.
And in Mandarin, that is from Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. Here we go again. That's Mandarin, Tom. That is Mandarin.
Now, is he in the studio again?
Or no, he's that? Not. No, he's not in the studio. He's back. He's back where he belongs. Up there, up there in the great white north, as we, but we're here. You and I.
And his, what was his name again? I mean, people.
What were was his? Still is his name. In fact, it's Phil Hong.
Phil Hong. Yes, Phil Hong. It was enjoyable talking to him last time.
Running over there, who runs SRN MediaWorks and 148.ca. Don't forget, go over there, and you can go to 148.ca/Frank, and you could be you could read lots of fun things, crazy things, fun things. Maybe you'll even. Learn something. But we're going to learn something, I know, because every time Tom appears on the show, the things that we learn, the things that you have researched and put together, you're back in school for your last semester, is that correct?
Well, this is my last school year, yeah.
Oh, okay. I said semester, I was wrong.
So that's okay.
What is a semester anyway?
You have a male brain, so... You have to take some consideration there.
I think of a mail order brain. I think sometimes, I believe. I tried
to return it.
No, it's like, you know, if you don't take it back in 30 days, it's the old trick, right?
Remember
the trick? Yeah. Money back in 30 days. Why? Because nobody does it, right?
Yeah, I mean, very, very few people. By the time. You know, by the time it sits on your desk, whatever it is, and you don't even get a chance to try it, it's already 25 days by the time you try it, and then it's, I'll just keep it.
Three easy payments of $13.33. why don't they round out those numbers? What is the psychological, you know, you're the marketing genius. Why don't they say $13, $12? Why is it like $8.99, $13.33? What does that do?
Well, $13.33, I can't speak about, but $19.95, it's just psychological because your brain registers less than $20. It's less than $20. Even in 1999, you know, it's like it's only a penny less than $20.
And 1999 is a year less than 2000.
Yeah, that was a big year. We thought we're gonna lose it in 2000.
I never thought for a second it was gonna happen. But you know, what you were saying, 1995, they do it now. It's the guy who sells, it's Ron Popeil, you know, who sells knives and he sells the hairspray that makes your bald disappear.
Yeah.
He sells now these knife commercials he does in the middle of the night. They go on for hours. And he sells these knives. And he says, you know, this knife, oh, don't you love this? This knife alone goes for $100. That's so. You know, it's like this knife goes for $100. Yeah. It's like, what? It doesn't go for $100. So he says, this knife goes for $100, but today you get it. And then wait, we'll give you something else. And he's got like 34 knives, and he says, and all of this for three easy payments of $13.39 or something like that. It's like the weirdest number.
Yeah, that is kind of weird. I don't know. Just make it, I don't know.
Okay, well, enough of that. Enough of that stuff. For that stuff. We're here, of course, to talk about the male brain. Is this the book? Is there a book? It's a book called The Male.
Yeah, you can see it because
I can see it.
And I'm on video here. So
it's not the book I saw, or it's the book I saw with a different cover when I was searching. Who's that by? Lucerne Lubickman?
This is by Luann Brizendine.
Okay, that's it. Yeah, it's the same book. You got a different cover on Amazon.
Oh, yeah?
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
I like this cover. Is very, it's a good symbol on the front because, most people, everybody can't see this except you.
Describe it.
Yeah, it's it's made to look like a brain, but it's really a clump of duct tape. Of course, there is meaning in that. There's meaning to that because part of the male brain, part of our makeup, is to fix things. And if you want to get into that later, I mean, because even in terms of relationships, it's one of the problems of communicating with women. Well, just to give you an example, my therapist told me, and she's a woman, my therapist said, in relation to problems I was having in relationship with a woman, she said, women don't want you to fix things. They want to communicate. They want to communicate. Don't try to fix the situation. This is one major difference between the male and the female. We're wired to fix things, and it, physically, literally, and even communicative and emotional problems, we want to fix them.
And yet, when our wiring goes wrong, we can't fix our own wires. We can't rewire ourselves.
No.
We have to go to another man to be fixed?
We can't rewire ourselves. As far as I know, I don't know.
We all wired.
We can do certain things. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, is that must be something very primal, correct? Is that what she
does? Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is definitely primal stuff. You know, excuse me, I'm sorry. Last month we talked about how animals are more like us than we thought, and we're talking about their brains and their biological makeup and their behavior and how they learn. Decades ago, we never thought they would learn. We thought it was instinct. Well, in the case between when you compare men and women, their brains, in a way, it's an interesting thing. It is more like instinct. It's a biological wiring that makes us different. So like today, a lot of what I'm going to talk about is how our hormones affect our behavior and how that's different from women.
And if any people, if any two men know how hormones, it's Tom and I. No, listen, I was thinking of you last week because of this animal stuff, because on last week's show, I had the sad situation of announcing the death of Alex, the African gray parrot, the smartest parrot in the world, died.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm trying to pass this on to everyone, as I did at the end of the show last week. I'll tell you this, and then we'll go back to male brains. Well, this actually has to do with we were talking about birds. You and I, how smart birds can get.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Alex, let me go over this too for everybody who didn't listen or want to listen. And remember, you could go back to juicedtalk.com and hear this show from last week. But Alex didn't just know 100; he knew 100 more than 100 words. Alex knew more than 100 words. He was 31 years old when he died. Okay, which I thought was I thought that was young for a parrot. I thought parrots lived to be like 112 or something. But listen to this. This was the thing that really touched us all. And something that I wanted to pass on and tell Alex, I'm laughing at this. Alex had last words. Last words.
Okay. And what were Alex's last words?
Okay, I'll tell you in a second. But let me just mention this too: that Alex also he figured out the meaning of none all by himself. The meaning of none, not. A priest, none. I'm none. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Yeah.
I have none. Nothing. Nothing. Okay. Here. I don't know. They didn't mention much of how he did, but he figured this out and used the concept, which I think is fascinating because certainly philosophically we could talk about any number of people talking about understanding, you know, the whole concept of nothing or none.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In order to understand none, you have to understand having something. You have to understand something. Okay.
Right.
Okay, but listen to this. So then he died. So he's sick apparently, and he's dying, and he's on his death cage. I don't know where are you on if you're a parrot, your death perch.
Your death perch.
But listen to this.
Poor Alex on his death perch.
On his death perch, Alex. The people around him who kept him and worked with him and the doctors, you know, Irene Pepperberg and some other people. Listen to what he said. Mm-hmm. Here's what he said. They're listening. And I guess he knew he had to say last words. And this is what I said last week. I'm going to tell you about these last words again to people who heard last week and tell Tom for the first time. And I'm saying I think we should all say this. Every time we leave anybody, we're going away from anybody, whether they're our enemy, whether they're our friends, lovers, whatever, whoever these persons might be to us, we should say these words. This is what Alex said in his last breath. You be good. See you tomorrow. I love you.
Seriously?
Yes. You be good. See you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
I love you.
I love you.
And I think that is gorgeous. I think that is so great. And I said, you know, even if it's somebody you hate or whatever it is, however you want to say it, loud, soft, in someone's ear, in their face. I think that is like one of the greatest parting, it's not a sentence, whatever. Those are some of the greatest parting words I ever heard. Oscar Wilde's weren't even that profound.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's a parrot from a parrot's brain.
Wow.
Huh? Isn't that something?
This is very appropriate.
Yes.
Because, you know, my school, I teach at Polytechnic High School, and our mascot is the mighty parrot.
Mm.
And, I have to share this Alex story with our student body.
He's an African gray
parrot. Or anybody
parrot.
That comes around.
Yeah. So you can look him up. You could Google him or something. There's probably tons of stuff about him. Be a good little topic for you and your – it was one of the things we talked about. I think that was a great story. So there's the parrot thing. So we were thinking about you last week. Now we're talking about the male brain, which each of us has.
In one way or another, yes.
Here another. And so when we think and when we talk to one another, we're talking to one another, you and I, aside from the fact that we know each other for eons and have talked to each other so many times and have a certain rhythm as people do with friends and close people. We do just on a gender basis talk to one another differently than you and I would talk to any female with a female brain, as opposed to a female with a male brain. I mean, female, correct?
Yes. excuse me. Yes, there's a number of things going on there. There's the whole cultural you know, we learned not to say certain things in front of women and so on and so forth. But our whole style and our vocabulary is different. Yeah. There's many studies on that, on how the male, female use different, they have a different vocabulary.
Well, tell us the core of the book. I mean, because okay. it's not the fix. I mean, go through some of that, and then we'll come up with some ideas and stuff yeah. before we take any breaks or anything. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, basically, boys are they're wired to move, to follow movement, and to hit targets. I mean, this is. One major difference between the male and the female is our propensity to move, make things move faster the better, follow things moving, hit very unlike women.
Does that bring in the element of sport?
Why? Yes, yes. It's one reason. Generally speaking, you know, the male is more into sports in all cultures. Generally speaking, the male is more into sports than the woman. You know, this again is certainly there are women in sports and women love sports, but just overall, generally speaking, males are there's a greater propensity to be in sports, and probably from that wiring to make things move, follow movement, hit targets.
Hey, did you hear about, what was his name? When they had that famous male-female tennis match back in the 70s, you remember, Bobby Riggs, was that his name? Bobby Riggs, and what was her name? Do you remember that?
Billie Jean King.
Yeah, yeah. Did you hear that was fixed?
Well, no. In fact, I just saw her on the NPR, or I think it was NPR. No, PBS. PBS just did a American Masters film on her.
Well, that, yeah, but that her. would have taken a long time to do. I mean, this was like a recent. It was a recent news thing. You could Google it or what have you. She said, "'Cause he's dead, right?
No,
he's not dead. He's
no,
alive?
She was just on Colbert.
No, him.
She was just on last week.
No. I mean, Bobby Riggs is dead, isn't he?
Bobby Riggs is dead. Yes.
So she brought it up. I think she waited till he was dead or what have you. But she said it was fixed so that she would win. I swore I saw that.
Did you hear her say this?
I swore I saw this as a as an article, like in a regular news format.
Because I just heard two separate interviews with her on the subject, and she was promoting the PBS special American Masters about her, and she said no. She told him, "I'm only going to play you once, no matter what happens, and I'm telling you, I'm going for you. I'm gonna be trying to beat you, no matter what."
Well, anyone can look that up, as I said. You can just go look it up. Go Google it or something if you want to, if you care. Maybe a lot of people don't even know what we're talking about because they're too young. That was
That was in the 70s. It meant a lot to her for women's liberation. And, you know, she wanted to show that women could compete.
Well, man, wait a second. In relationship to what you're talking about in male brain and female brain, the fact is that Bobby wanted to fix it.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Maybe that's what you mean.
Maybe. In that sense,
being the male brain, he wanted to fix it.
Let's fix this.
But
maybe.
Okay, anyway. That's,
I always wondered, actually. I mean, I wondered about that, like if it had been fixed. But from her interviews in the last week, she said, no, I really went all out and I wanted to beat him, and I did.
Well, whether it was or wasn't, I don't think it would have made much of. I mean, how much would the world have changed if he won? How do we know, right?
No. Yeah.
Big deal. But it is there. I guess why that came to mind was because we talk about movement and sports and men and sports, and yet women are thoroughly involved in sports. I mean, you know, they might not be banging their heads playing football, but that's just because they're smarter, right?
Yeah.
But they do almost anything else. They play. They don't compete a lot with men, and yeah, even animals, because you know, a lot of horses don't race against males, and there's a lot of still a male female class when it comes to it. I wonder what that has to do with the brain.
That's interesting. Yeah, there's when they have a handicap race, they position the horses in such a way, or give them less weight to compete with the other horses that may be rated above them. Is that right?
Well, that's not necessarily sex, though. I mean, that's not necessarily. If it's an open, females can race, but they don't want females to race against males as much as they usually in their own division. Their girls race against girls, younger girls, older girls race against older girls, and once in a while they mix them up. But and I think in other sports too. I don't know about greyhounds. I think greyhounds are sexless. Here's the deal. The deal is, tell us more about fixing and speeding and men and whatever. I'm probably doing a male brain thing right now, aren't I? Am I doing a male brain thing?
You're doing
what am I doing?
I think you're doing a Frank brain thing right now. That's
what I'm just jumping. I'm running down rabbit holes. Go back to where you were before and get back to male brain.
So where was I?
We're fast. Boy, moving,
males are
follow things
kind of wired to follow things, to make things move, to follow movement. Basically the males are the movers and the women are the shakers.
Schmuck. I'll buy it.
Yes, men are the movers and women are the shakers in this world. So absolutely men are, wired for that, for movement and to make things move. But because this is it's a fairly recent discovery about males. There's this bonding that goes on right after birth, where a child looks at his or her mother's face. Well, let's say her mother's face. And looks right in the eyes of her mother. But boys don't do it as much as girls. They don't look in the face. They don't.
And they're too busy looking at the breasts.
Yes. Right?
All
right? Absolutely. That's hard to resist, even when you're 4 months old.
Exactly.
Or especially when you're 4 months old. But.
So you're saying the men have a different relationship with their mother at infancy than she's saying this book? You're not, because you didn't research this stuff. You just read the book.
They do. They have a different relationship. But for a while, scientists were thinking that it was a deficiency a deficiency in the male. But actually now they say, no, that's just a male, because males need to look at things moving. So if your mother's staring in the face, it's like, stop staring at me, because I need to look at that thing flying across the room, not you.
So males who were born into like a military family will be a lot more happier, because they're always moving around, because they're going different places and they like the change of scenery. Is it, when we say movement, as a kid.
Well, I just mean, movement in front of their face, something flies by.
Women ignore that?
Somebody comes in the room, or a cat jumps on the shelf.
And the female ignores that?
Not ignores it, but is more prone to just gaze directly into the mother's eyes and bond during this bonding period. And the males they're not as engaged with the eye contact with the mother.
So the
and
cat,
this trait continues throughout the life of the male, where it's harder for men to look someone in the eye and talk to them for a long period of time. It's easier for a woman. A woman is more prone to do that.
Okay. There's an entirely, and I don't know, I didn't read the book, you read the book, but later on we'll get into this because there's an entire side of this in the new millennium that you would talk about that you wouldn't talk about and another time, because this is not just black and white anymore. But even back then, of course, remember men, before there was an open and honest admission of sexual identity, let's say. Before that, men were men, and women were women, and everything was kept. And the masculine was a masculine, the feminine was a feminine. His and her. Geez, this goes back to language. I mean, you look at different languages, and they have the feminine and the masculine, right? They for some reason.
Yeah.
I have no idea why. I guess because when the men were talking to ladies, when the males were talking to females in Spanish, it had to be an A, not an O, and an E. I have no idea why that has to do with any of this. But just another person, but they changed even the language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but now, but even back then, men would be, there were certain men who were considered more compassionate because they were in touch with their feminine side, right?
Now,
so does that mean that there's a part of the brain that men were more in touch were more dealing with better than other men when dealing with women? Or is there no such thing as a feminine side of the brain in a male brain?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm going to relate an anecdote that's in the book. This happened to Dr. Brizendine. She grew up in the 70s in Billie Jean King time. She was a young mother around the time of Billie Jean King in the 70s. And as you recall, the women's liberation movement was happening. And it became part of our culture to think, and especially the mothers of that time, it was like, we have to get our sons to be more sensitive and less violent and so on. And we have to put them in the culture of being more aware of things like girls are, and just to make them more sensitive, So she gave her young son a Barbie doll, and she observed him, especially, being a scientist, as she closely watched everything. She observed him, and he was very excited when he got the present. He sort of ripped open the package and was very happy to see the Barbie doll, and immediately grabbed her, took his hand and grabbed her by the torso, extended her out with her legs, and used her as a sword in an imaginary battle with some other swordsman. So he had no interest whatsoever with playing with a Barbie doll as a person or a doll. He had to move around, play swords, sword fighting, and so on and so forth. And she was then, before she knew all about brain, male and female brains, it took her back a little bit. She said, oh my goodness, I have a violent son,
Using a woman as a weapon.
Yes.
In a way.
Yeah.
So she was worried because the kid wanted to use the Barbie. Why did she gave him a Barbie doll? What did she expect? I mean, this is a match. What did she expect, do you think?
Well, that she doesn't say, but that's interesting to speculate on that. I guess she thought maybe she would, maybe he would dress her like a daughter. If she had a daughter, might
be more unlikely he'd undress her, right? Not dress her.
dresser and.
Did you do that when you were a kid?
I mean, you know.
Did you do that? You
I had don't have children myself.
Wait, yeah, but you had sisters. Did you ever get a doll, one of your sister's doll, and like look down with the doll? I didn't use it as a sword. The first one I ever saw.
It's a public admissions here on. I guess there was a time.
I remember
when
doing
it. Started
you know?
Being, you know, sexually curious. And
I
quickly learned that the Barbie the doll was not anatomically correct. Having seen one of my sisters in the bathroom, to her great dismay, as I walked in. Yeah, but yeah, so.
But you knew it wasn't a guy, and you knew it wasn't a sword.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't a guy, and I had no desire to pick up Barbie and use her as a sword, you know.
The funny thing is that my aunt gave my cousin, who's a girl, a gun, and she put clothes on it. And
okay, yeah.
A toy gun, I meant, not a real gun. I ruined the joke. Tom Savino's with us. It's the Savino Cotolo Chronicles here. My friends, my good friends, here at Cotolo Chronicles, SRN, MediaWorks, and all the other fine stations that are running us throughout the week and what have you. And Tom comes to us courtesy of the state of California. I don't know. You're courtesy of him.
I'm in an undisclosed location in California, trying desperately to stop fracking here, but
you've been. I know you've really been politically involved with that stuff. Have you been tweeting and writing petitions and doing all? Where does all that stuff go? Who gets it?
It's disheartening because I have 300 signatures for my petition, which I had first mentioned on this show.
I still use the same one. I don't have. I have like one account, and I use one signature. Well, he was right over his head. If I go over his head, I'm really in trouble. I'm really in trouble. Okay, you got 300 signatures in a petition.
Yeah,
I took it literally. I thought you have 300 signatures. You have 300 signatures in a petition. Let me ask you something about petitions. You know what I sound like? I sound like I forgot his name. The guy who's in all the Christopher Guest movies. And I forgot his name, and he's great. He's a great, funny guy. I sound like him now. I guess I'm channeling him. How do you know when you give somebody a petition? How do they verify petitions? I mean, do you just make a pledge that these are all real signatures? I mean, can't somebody just can't like three people get in a room and sign things 800 times and say, hey, we got 800 signatures? I mean, nobody verifies that stuff, do they?
I don't know.
Well,
I really don't know. This organization called Credo had asked me. They read something I wrote or something, and they said, "We'd like you to spearhead this petition attempt in Burbank." And I said, "Well, okay, but you know, I actually that was a question. That's a question I want to ask them. I mean, how do you know this is? How does anybody know this is real or?" I guess you could do that, you know.
Tom recently had a letter published in the L.A. Times. I read your letter.
Well, thank you.
And
I don't know. Thank you. Thank you for reading the letter.
Yes, thank you. You're welcome. Quite welcome. It didn't take much time at all.
just two paragraphs.
You know, I didn't have to make a sandwich and sit down and then, you know, and relax. Yeah. Yes, it was. But it was not just a good point, even though I've not seen the movie. You were talking about that TV show.
Show
the newsroom, but I think it was a good point, and nobody else made that point. The fact about drama, because you would know drama because we'd been in that kind of stuff. So, and written drama and stuff. So you, but nobody figured that. I mean, it's amazing how people take shows and things, and they don't understand the confines. Even when you're making a statement about something or political, they don't realize that there are certain elements that still have to adhere to in order to make it a drama.
Yeah, as you could probably figure out from my letter, I was responding to an article that was in the calendar section, the LA Times calendar section, the week before, that was they interviewed real, you know, real life news people who were kind of putting down the show because, oh, you know, this is nothing like a real newsroom because we do this and we do. And I was thinking, what? That's not the point. I mean, is there, who cares if it's not like a, you know, it's a drama. Yeah. It has another purpose. It can go actually deeper than just watching a bunch of people do their job in a newsroom, you know.
It's like people arguing, and they were probably Republicans, were arguing when they saw Othello. And they went, you know, he wasn't black. The real Othello, Othello wasn't black, you know. No, it's true though. I don't know why. And you think they would know because, well, they have their own rules. You know, there's rules of journalism. And but anyway, so you were talking about forget about. Oh, I don't know about fracking anyway. Every time I hear about that, it confuses me. I'm still trying to figure out Obamacare, which you know, I was this week. I actually studied some and went to talk to people about it because you know the deadline's coming up for those of you who don't know. It's going to be illegal not to have. I didn't realize. I didn't look at it that way. It's going to be illegal not to have health insurance.
Yeah, from what I understand.
That's what you asked. True. You understand correctly, man.
Thank you.
And the male brain, and you're right. I mean, I don't know about my own brain, Tom, anymore. I don't. Maybe I never did. But these things you're telling me things that are common, no matter how much of an individual or unique a person thinks that, they might be or what have you, these things you're talking about are true. Because I have found myself in many relationships where it's like, okay, something's happening. Let me tell you this and let me tell you that. Let me tell you this and what about this and what about that? And suddenly, you know, you've taken out the emotional toolkit. You're trying and half, more than half the time, I just don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that drives us crazy is that women want. It seems that the women just want to always talk about their emotions and our emotions and our relationship. This is one of the biggest difference between us is see they're wired. They have this hormone, oxytocin, I said it right.
It sounds oxytocin. Like you made that one up.
Oxytocin. Oxytocin.
Okay.
And you know how sex, how we value sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even now. Even now.
Even now.
Extended age and everything. But women were never value sex to that degree. They have different reasons for sex, but what they value, like on the same level where we would put sex, they put communication, and it's oxytocin that it stimulates the oxytocin. The more oxytocin they have by communicating. It's actually an addictive thing.
So we don't have oxytocin? We don't have oxytocin?
We do. Each of the male and female, we share degrees of the same hormones.
Okay.
But, of course, you know, they have way more estrogen than we do, and we have way more testosterone than they do.
Okay.
And the oxytocin, that's their big rush with communication. So they're prone. Like, we want to talk. Can we just talk about that? I mean, the worst phrase a man can, or at least me. Let me speak for
at least me.
Well, the worst phrase a guy can hear, is we need to talk.
Oh yeah. It's like, we need to talk.
That we need to talk phrase. That's
so a man immediately is affronted by that because he thinks there's something bad's going on, or we're going to go into a territory I really don't want to go to that particular territory and start expressing myself. And yet, men are conduits of expression when you talk about drama, poetry, and all. I mean, men have written and have used their expression in so many different ways. Women do that too, but. Men, it's not like men don't express themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah. Although generally, if you take, you know, the among the millions of the populace of males, I don't think that many guys communicate that much, you know. I do.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. I mean, someday maybe they'll do a study like measure hormones of writers or who knows. They can maybe these days with all the technology, they might even be able to go back and measure Shakespeare's.
Well, it might have something to do with art. You mean being an artist might have something to do with the different hormones are working, something chemical, something. Something more than just alcohol.
Yeah. And of course, there's the alcohol, too. Excuse me.
Now, okay, so men, so there's that hormone that they have. And what is the perfect situation? I mean, this is really, you know, battle of the sexes here, too, but now it's based on chemical. Does she talk about the middle? What is the middle ground? What's the bridge? Or am I going too far ahead of myself? I mean, the bridge between the halfway point, the meeting point, and I mean, it's all about negotiation, and men doesn't want to negotiate, right? Is that it?
I lost your train. It's all about the beginning of the show. Like, get on board.
It's all about men don't want to. I'm just looking for what's the middle ground? Does she talk about that? I mean, where does the speaking of Twains? Where does the Twain meet?
in a controversy between a male and a female, or conflict between?
These are two men, friends, who are not getting. Now we're not. I don't know. Maybe he's using too much of his female brain, and right now maybe I'm using too much of my female brain, and he's using too much of his male brain. What does she say about communicating? How does it work? Does it have to do with the hormones? How does man do it with woman then? Or is this just a conflict that's always going to be there and everybody's just going to, well, you know, you go to your room, I'll go to my room as the end of it. Well, this is never going to settle this.
There's kind of truth in both of those scenarios.
Okay.
I mean, I think based on what she said in her book and my personal experience, and I would venture to say yours too.
Thank you very much. Good night, everybody. go ahead.
It's really hard for us to communicate, to get to the nitty gritty of the whatever the issue is, to deal with some emotional issue, because again, like I said in the beginning, as my therapist said, you know, our immediate thing is like, well, what can I do to fix this? You know, well, let me fix this. I'll fix this, and they don't want us to fix it. They just want to keep talking, you know, at all costs. It's, you know, they want to keep communicating, and it changes. And this is okay. This is the thing that drives me nuts. Is okay. So I do the talking and I do the communicating, it's way harder for me to do it, and I really have to work at the communication and do that. And okay, so now it's done. See, because I want it to be fixed. See. Okay, it's fixed now, right? But it's never fixed. It's never fixed.
Never.
It's like a forever
broken.
Well, see, they don't see it as broken. They just see it as life, and we need to talk about this forever and deal with it. And it's like, no, please. Well,
there's a name in my next book, Forever Broken. I think that's.
Forever
that'll
broken.
Go into my. Well, you know, I don't see eye to eye with a lot of men in a lot of this stuff. But I find I have even worse problems because those are easy problems. I have worse problems because I can find a reason. I can find a thousand reasons for everything, I mean, I've not, and, you know, when you know me, I mean, I could look, I could just see 100 scenarios to anything, and yet a woman usually say, look, this is how it is right now. And I'm like, no, tell me, it's not just that way. It's 1,000 other ways. And it's this and it's that and it's this and it's that. And so when I express what I think, obviously, whether it's 1,000 things or 1,000,000 things, I'm wrong according to them because I'm missing their point, which is just one thing. Did I make that clear or did I just?
No, that,
you
yeah,
got that?
That made it. Yeah, that was clear. I followed you. I was on the train for that one.
Because I could express myself, and while I'm expressing myself, I could think it through aloud. You say so. I could be saying like, well, you know, I'm hungry. The reason I'm being the reason I'm kind of on edge is because I'm hungry. But then again, there was this other thing that, you know, and there was that. And sometimes I get angry for this and that. It's because of this. And in other words, it becomes this rigmarole with me because there's so much going on in my brain and it's constantly coming forward. I address it all. And they're like, get that, or sometimes it's my approach. Now, does she talk in there about attack or the way, the way a man expresses himself? Not just does he, but the way. You could say like, you could say things, and women can take it.
Yeah.
Differently, even though you're saying something perfectly wonderful and support and everything, and they just like, what?
Yeah.
How, you know?
She doesn't talk too much about that, but she'll get to the, she talks about what a woman wants. Wasn't there a movie by that name or something?
What in a that woman book, wants. There was there's a very famous, I don't know who wrote it. What does woman want? And the answer to that is, to get her way with man. And that was, you know, because somebody says, what does woman want? Yeah. What does woman want? Some philosopher somewhere. Of course, he was a man. And he was watching a movie at the time because he couldn't. So, well, drinking a beer.
If ultimately a woman wants a protector and a provider, and it's not just not just our species, but then go back to the animals again. There's a term here from primates, other primates, the mating behavior of primates. All right, primatologists have dubbed this. Okay, females have more sex with males who bring them meat.
You want to rephrase that? Could you rephrase that? I think maybe it doesn't sound too clinical. Can you?
Primatologists have dubbed this the meat for sex principle.
Meat for sex
the meat
principle.
For sex principle. Even in humans, although maybe not for humans, maybe not literally.
Should have been a butcher.
Remember when I was dating? Do you remember when I was dating that woman, Laura? Take me to Big Daddy's, Laura.
Yes, take me to Big Daddy's. Yes, I do. How do I remember that? Oh, yes.
All she wanted was to go for me to take it to have hamburgers, you know. But more seriously.
Take me to Big Daddy's.
Women, you know, they want somebody to provide for them. They are, because of our socialization. Okay, other primates want a male to give meat, but humans want protection, somebody who could provide. You know, if you're wealthy, if you're rich or wealthy, that's attractive. That's an attractive trait.
Because
for
there's security and safety involved in that. So this is all a matter of, is this a search for security and safety?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And men are looking for, and men are looking for that. How? I mean, are we getting into like Oedipus stuff here or what?
You mean men just want sex.
What happened to men and security? So men are not looking for security. Men are looking for what? Adventure?
They're what? Just looking to they're looking to catch things that move. To here's, shoot things at targets.
Here's an old Russian saying. It comes from a male. I know. I might have said this before. I know. This I think really explains what we're talking about with the male brain, and it has a Russian origin. Okay. Russian father says to his son, and I'm not even going to do a dialect. He says, "Son, you cannot make love to all the women in the world, but you have to try." Right?
That is that's a very profound statement. I mean, it definitely is in line with what Dr. Brizendine is saying. We are wired to have sex with as many women as we can. We are wired to have the most children that we possibly can. Now, of course, through culture and socialization, you know, we come to the intellectual thought that this is not a good idea. I don't want children all over the place. I don't want, you know, but biologically, that hasn't changed. We want to do that. We want to have as much sex as possible for spreading our seed as much as we can.
And the more children we have, the more movement there is around the house.
Yeah, it makes things very interesting.
Kids just running around.
Especially if you have boys. You know.
Which is why, of course, Genghis Khan didn't just rule the world. He repopulated it. But we're going to go back and we're going to revisit that one day. I did years ago, and I don't even know how many years ago, because I've lost track of doing this, but I did a show about how we're all really related to Genghis Khan and how the Huns repopulated the world around that time, especially us Italians. You know, there's a lot of Hun in us. Based on that. But the point is, that's what they did.
Is that why all my girlfriends call me Hun?
Maybe that's it, yes. Okay. That's you barbarian. You promised you. That's why when you...
Especially when I was shirtless.
That's why you bring them meat. You know, I remember being with a bunch of kids from high school or junior high school, and we went to Connecticut to see Taming of the Shrew. At the Avon Theater they had up there, because they had a replica of the globe. There was the Avon, Stratford, Connecticut, because Stratford on the Avon.
Yeah.
You know, Etzet, Ward on the Riddle Rock and so on, whatever it is. And here's the deal. All the guys, there's a part where, with Pompey, I forgot his name. Partheus, no, I forgot his name. Kate is the lady, the shrew. And she starts screaming because she's hungry or whatever, and he's depriving her because he's training her. You know, if anybody doesn't know Taming of the Shrew, but he's training her because she's such a bitch. You know, he's training her to like love, which is weird. There's a male brain and female brain. If you want to read Taming of the Shrew, you might really get an idea. But anyway, there's a point where she starts screaming, "I want meat."
Really?
Yes, yes. You look at the play. It's in there, right? And
I saw it when I was in high school, but I don't remember that.
The entire male contingent of everybody in the junior, of all the guys, completely crack up. And I just go, yeah! It's just their interpretation. That's male brain, that adolescence male. I don't know. That's just primal.
Yeah. Well, that's really, you know, of course, Shakespeare, I don't know. He seems to know everything. He's somehow was in touch with the recent research of brain, you know, the meat, give me meat for sex thing.
Yeah, I mean, it might have had different levels of meaning or what have you, but I just thought it was great how the girls didn't say anything. The guys just went absolutely out of their minds. Speaking of out of their minds, let's take a short break here and sell some books and talk about Juice Talked, and then and run to the bathroom if we have to. How you doing, Tom? How's your bladder holding up?
It's okay.
And then we come back. Oh, there you go. You're drinking. And then we'll come back here shortly. Good old Jeremy has walked into the studio. and he has an announcement to make, and then we'll go start talking about the male brain some more, and maybe he'll even contribute some of his, because he does have a male brain, his small one. Hey, where's my bodyguard tonight? He's not around, huh? Okay, so let me just do this. Take a breath, and then I'm going to run off to the bathroom. Then Jeremy is going to talk to him, and then we'll get back to this. Tom Savino, of course, once again, it's the Savino Cotolo Chronicles right here and only here for the umpteenth time. Y2K plus 13. We'll be right back.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky Escapades. Parallel Universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Juiced Talk Radio. It's juicy. JuicedTalk.com. Hear Frank Cotolo's Cotolo Chronicles.
Imagine if there were companies that made cookies, and they only got together to make like one a certain amount of cookies for a certain amount of time. Okay.
Transistor by Velvet Steel.
You know, you've got short nipples, you've got long nipples that stick up from the body, you've got big areolas, you've got small areolas, you've got different colors, you've got hair growing off them, you've got everything growing, you've got veiny nipples, you've got all kinds of different things. But for some people, they have really small nipples.
And the Fabulous D Show by me, the artist D.
You bring this out in me.
I know. And that's why this is so unique, because you could do a million of your own shows.
And I would never do this there, no.
Exactly. You'd never start saying, who did they suck off to get that?
All at Juiced Talk, archived for your listening pleasure. JuicedTalk.com.
A former adjudicator for the Immigration Board has been jailed for 18 months. Markham Council has agreed to renumber a townhouse. There might be a slight bit of frustration for Canada's largest city without a hospital. Vaughan is no longer the city above Toronto as the municipal government tries to update itself with a new modern look. But if you live in the 905 area code, you'll have a new set of numbers.
Simple, straightforward, and relevant to you. SRN National News.
What about the world?
Welcome back to Cotolo Chronicles. This is not your host, Frank Cotolo, whose name adorns the title of the show. This is your sometimes frequent co-host, your favorite comedian, Mr. Jeremy Long, here to tell you, the listeners of Cotolo Chronicles, that the much-awaited Frank Cotolo documentary is finally completed and will be available for your viewing pleasure in just a few days. It's exciting news, and we should know more on next week's show as to how exactly you can access this and watch it yourself at your house.
Well, how do you like them apples, Tom?
I like them apples.
Did he
cut me out? Am I on the cutting room floor?
No, I'm not anxious, but I'm fascinated. I didn't listen to anybody, although I took part in. Obviously, to pardon in it, but I didn't listen to anybody's section who talked with me. What? Who talked about me? So this is going to be completely, aside from the cutting and everything that he did, I don't know how he did it. I mean, this is going to be completely new to me.
Tom, you didn't end up on the cutting room floor, but Frank did end up on the cutting room floor.
So I would imagine. So it's just people talking about Frank.
I imagine.
There's still pictures of him.
Everything. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, that should be a lot of fun. Certainly not because I'm fun, but because Jeremy's a craft. How he presents it, as I told him from the beginning, because I didn't. He asked me to do this. I didn't put an ad. You know, wanted documenteur. So I said, well, you know, if you want me to be the subject of this, of making this film, then how you present it is going to be the the art of it or whatever, not necessarily me, but I hope it will be entertaining because...
I think I'm very proud of it. I like how it turned out and I structured it in a way that should be fun and enjoyable, so...
Well, that's good. Then we'll see, and we'll let everybody else see how to get it, how to buy it, what to do with it, or whatever. I don't know what you're going to do. I can't imagine anybody buying, not because of you. No, it's you. I mean, I know because you produced and directed this thing and put it together. But it's like, you know, watch a documentary of me. It's like it's absurd to me. You know, I mean, you can see it, what have you. Some people will look at it, and people who don't know me won't care, and people who do. No, me won't care. I don't know. It's a very strange position for me to be in. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
I just have to figure out. I mean, I don't really want to charge for it either because I don't know how many people buy it. And I really don't like charging for my work anyways. So I would just need to figure out a way to get it online for free to people because I don't know if it'll go on YouTube. It's probably too long. And YouTube has, like, guidelines. I think it's too long for YouTube. So I need to figure out a way to get it online for people to watch for free.
They have entire movies on YouTube, but there actually may be a contingent that nothing that long with my name connected to it.
They have a specific guideline.
So yeah, I'm really looking forward to how it came out.
We're having a big viewing party, so Tom, you can come visit and come to the red carpet premiere of the Frank Attola documentary.
When will that be?
You know, I don't know. I mentioned that in the beginning, Tom. I said to him, I said, hey, we should have some people over and, you know, we'll have a viewing party here. And then I thought to myself and said to others, of course, I said, I don't know because if I'm seeing it, I mean, I don't say I'm self-conscious, but it's kind of weird. I don't know if I want to see it with everybody because, you know what I mean? I don't know what I'm saying. Just weird. It's a strange position to be in. It's like, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see what happens with it, though. It should be fun.
I told a lot of people about this viewing party who want to come, so they can't take it back now.
Well, you know, are they male brains or female brains? Some fun females in it, and we really had a lot of fun with this. I don't want anybody to take it seriously, to take me seriously. I don't really want anybody to take anything seriously. Is that part of my male brain, Tom, anymore, or is that just age?
I think it's age.
Okay.
One of these days, well, you know what? We should do a show on the very old male brain, but then we'll forget when it's on, so we won't do it.
Okay.
I'd like to. This is cool.
Go.
It's about biology here, Cam. But the saliva. Okay, saliva apparently has a lot of molecules of testosterone, that is the male saliva. So French kissing is a very good thing if you're trying to score, because what happens is the female actually takes in the saliva of the male and the testosterone that's in the saliva, and gets
hair in her mouth.
Gets
hair in her mouth. She takes in the testosterone. So you're telling me that testosterone, when transferred to a woman orally uh-huh. transferred testosterone, gets her hotter?
Yes. And she says here in the book, Doctor, she says, it's true what the girl's mother said. You know, kissing will lead to sex, so watch out.
The next girl I meet, I'm just going to give her a water bottle full of spit. And
he brought up another subject, and what? That is
spitting.
Three out of four males
spit at women.
Will have no problem with deception when it comes to trying to score sexually. No problem with deception, you know, like... I'm the producer of a film that, you know, I'm not sure. I didn't mean to implicate you here, Jeremy.
So men, you say men will do anything, they'll say anything, in order to have, the sexual experience?
Yes. At least from what she says, three to four men have no problem with that whatsoever.
And they know, though, but they know that the woman here's what, okay, let me look at this another way.
All right.
They're doing that because they don't think the woman or the subject, they don't think there's anything about themselves that would attract them to have sex. So they have to concoct a story. And in other words, I'm trying to get behind this. Why does a man want to put on this fake role? And why does he think that's better than himself?
Well, if, you know, I think we naturally know, I'm getting from this book that subconsciously we know that a woman is attracted to somebody who could provide, somebody who could protect. And in our society, that would be somebody who either has some sort of status or social power or money. And if you don't have any of those three, and there's a lot of men who don't have any of those three, then you resort to lying. And, you know, now that does lead to problems, because if you should hook up with a lady that you then become serious about, then you have problems. I mean, this is kind of the basis of many, you know, romantic comedies. You know, you have your false identity and the woman falls for you, and then you have to explain who you really are, this lowly, I don't know.
Something you don't want to do anyway, because you don't know who you're. You don't really know. You just want to play these roles. Men play roles more, and maybe this is one of the things that gets them into trouble with women. One of the things. It's like a million things. This is one of the things. And that is to play. That men like to play these roles. And even with what they really do, not only to romanticize what they really do, even if it's not that good, they amplify things. I don't know how you do that for a postman. I don't know, but they do. Think about it. If you don't have a very adventurous or romantic profession or lifestyle, and you meet this woman, and you go, she's really hot, but she's not going to like me because I'm a letter carrier. So I'm going to tell her about all the dogs, and at times I had rabies, and then I fought dogs. And he makes himself into something even bigger than he bigger. I said bigger. You know what I mean? More.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know, is that, what is that? The male self-esteem or something? I mean, lack of self, what is that?
It's the mating game.
It's the mating game.
And it's our brain and our wiring. Now, there's two things you said that I want to comment on.
Go.
You said dog and big, and I know you made that little, reference to big. Unfortunately, men, and this is men know, we're wired to know that the top dog, we want to be the top dog.
This is that alpha stuff, the alpha dog, the alpha, is this the stuff that,
we want to be the top dog, and we'll do anything to be the top dog. Now, it's biologically, it's known, both the male and the female know that a woman prefers a bigger guy. And I'm talking, genitally, but just tall, okay?
Really?
That's very, very unfortunate for me, you know?
I know.
So
I
what
know.
Do guys like me do? You know what we do? We become Woody Allen. We become, we use our humor. We have to compensate. We compensate.
For not being tall. For not being large.
Yes, for not being tall.
Tall.
For not being
not large.
Large.
Not necessarily large, because, but women don't go for obese men.
Generally not.
Yeah, you mean large. Maybe, you mean tall.
Mrs. Chris Christie, perhaps, but... But then again, he's the governor. You see, he has
power.
He has some top dog qualities there. You know?
Well, how can women have always said, and this is also true in drama, and this is also true in real life. I don't know how many times Tom and I used to, we were in a band. We used to play in bars. We used to hang out. We used to do lots of things in bars. Bars were our territory. We did a lot of things in bars. And wouldn't we always, anytime we saw a girl who was particularly attractive, and we would immediately, and if she wasn't with somebody who we deemed masculine enough or good looking enough, we would go, what the hell is she doing with him?
Oh,
look at that.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that,
was, yeah.
right? Isn't that always the case?
What in the world? What's going on
yeah,
there?
Why am I not? What is this? Right?
Yeah, yeah. We would do that. I remember that. Yeah.
And women would always.
Give me a break. Yeah. Come on.
Like, come on. Oh, God damn. But women would always have this come to the same defense in that argument, and then we say things like, "Well, you know, it's about your mind. It's about your personality. It's more than your looks." And then I'm thinking now, wait a second, that's the male mind. There's no difference if you look like a doofus, Magoo. It's no different than if you're, you know, a handsome guy. You're so, right. It's like, but because it's still a male brain. So, right?
Yes.
I mean, just because you don't have looks and you're, as a man, she's still going to come into conflict with the male brain.
Yes. Yeah. But we compensate. I guess we know instinctually or biologically, we know that a woman who's going to respond to a tall guy, a big guy, a strong guy, and they do know this by research, but the strength, the showing of strength, physical strength, is a turn on for women. And if you don't have those qualities, you still are wired, unfortunately, you still are wired to be top dog. So you're going to find another way to be top dog. So you'll have to try to be funny. I mean, this is I think how a lot of people develop sense of humor.
Magic.
If you think of with the comedians, you know,
pull out quarters out of a woman's ear, just walk up and, you know, there's a pull out and, hey, look, there's a quarter in your ear. Oh,
yeah.
And men, but the you know, socially, men are supposed to approach women in a social situation. Hi, can I buy you a drink? Hi, can I? And of course, in the beginning, we're all, I mean, what are we dealing with? The physical attraction, right? We're not, you know, go, hey, look, she's reading Catcher on the Rye. I want to go, hey, I want to talk to her. You know, it's like, you want to go to the library to pick up girls, right? Men don't do that. So, and it's, we still have to do it. And so we have the, what, pickup lines, all this junk, all this garbage that is associated with the first meeting of any woman, and yet she knows, and she's going to give us false signals, and we're not even going to pick up all the signals, are we?
Well, a part of this book is about the mating ritual, and we seem to pick up on very subtle signals. Some of them are, you know, just blatant, and then we pick on it like you want to come back to my place. That's, you know, right
pretty
away. That's
straightforward. Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be a good sign. But, you know, just the way of the body language, the way she moves her, the way you look tonight, the way, oh no, you can't. So, just subtle things. And you know what really fascinates me is smell, that we're not conscious of this. This is totally under the surface, but apparently we really react to smell. I got to tell you, this happened twice in my life. Once I was shopping at Ralph's here in California, just a supermarket here, and this woman, she was with a guy. She was with this guy, and she smelled and incredible. I mean, I just practically didn't care that, you know, she was with a guy. I was in the supermarket. I was just ready to just jump on her. It was like, I've never had such an experience like that. Actually, I did until about 2 weeks ago, when a counselor came in my room to get a student, and I had never met this counselor. And it's like, oh my goodness, this she smells, and I can't believe how she smells. But yeah. It's apparently this something, the pheromones or something.
I was in a little studio, once with Suzanne Summers, in the 80s, and I had written a little thing, and it was just, you know, it was just something going on, okay, and she was there, and there was just the room, and her husband was out in the you know, office or what have you. So I was sitting right next to her, as close as, talking to her, and we were working on something. And all I ever remember is that no one ever smelled like her again, no matter who. I mean, that's a long time ago, and you know, no one that's just passed me by or that I wound up with or not with. I have no idea. I think that's when they do perfume, and when they do that kind of when they do research on that stuff, don't they? And women are always saying, like, well, you know, this works for me, but it doesn't work for her, because it brings out different aromas, right, for different women. Perfume.
Oh yeah, perfumes. It will bring, exactly.
So a man buys perfume, which is a very intimate thing to buy a woman. You buy perfume and you give it to her, and she's like, oh, thank you, that's real sweet, and this is going to smell like crap on me. I,
this happened to me for real.
Yeah.
My first wife, if you recall, we were both pretty, then we were pretty, considered pretty heavy drinkers, as you recall, and when we were living in Bay Ridge, we would go to this bar, and there was this barmaid that I just knocked me out. And what really knocked me out about her was this, her fragrance. And I even asked her with my wife there, I said, what is that fragrance? You know, she said, White Shoulders.
I remember that, but I...
So...
I'm sorry.
So Terry said, you know, oh, get me some White Shoulders. It just didn't, no, definitely didn't work with my wife. The White Shoulders didn't work with her.
You know, I get the exact opposite. A remarkable thing. There's this gorgeous barmaid that I knew who actually taught me how to, like, do some bar, because I was going to be a bartender, okay? And I was working at the, you know, I was working at this club. But, you know, the funny thing about her is, like, I couldn't smell her. And I she had no smell. I couldn't believe this. I mean, she was absolutely, I mean, just drop-dead gorgeous. There's no way. I mean, the cars would crash outside looking in the window. I mean, but, and yet, every chance I got, I tried to get there. So once in a while, she'd hug me and say, hi, how you doing? And I'm like, where are you? I'm really, I swear, it's like I can't smell you. I mean, which, by the way, is the name.
Did you ever actually say that?
No, I never did, but it's the name of my new book. It's a romantic comedy. I can't smell you. And I just couldn't believe it. It's like, you know, if you've been working a couple hours, at least smell bad or smell some way. There was no fragrance whatsoever. I couldn't figure that out. I can't. It's really weird. But you know what? Let's get away from the smell here for a second, because I want here, now. Jeremy is of a completely different. No, I don't mean smell. I don't mean that reminded me of you. No, you're a completely different generation. So the kind of stuff that we're talking about here now, I want to. We could talk, because you know he dates and he knows women and girls and meets girls. Let's see how this stuff works. But you want to say something first?
I was just saying maybe her fragrance was nothing. Maybe like that's a new perfume at the time. That you spray on yourself and it masks any smell that you would smell like.
Yeah, I never saw that that brand. And
Nothing.
So let's talk to Alex. Too bad Alex isn't a lot, because he knows none, and he probably would have known. Alex the parrot would have known. Why doesn't she smell at all? Okay, let's go back to the male brain and see what Jeremy, how do you approach... How do young, and you know, because in your generation, what do people do now? Is it completely different?
How I approach women and how most men my age approach women is completely different. So it's like two different things. But
well, let's look at this socially, Tom. Let's see, because this is not an old book, right?
This is the current research and things.
Let's
yeah.
see how their style meets with what she's saying, because it couldn't change that much. The male beast hasn't changed that much. So tell us.
Well, it's I don't know about the book, but from what you guys were talking about and your experiences, it seems men are a lot more obvious, and blunt these days. They're just...
So you see a girl you like, and you're at a club or a bar. What do you do? What do people normally do? And are the girls, what do they do?
I've seen guys just go up and just like place themselves in front of the girl, or just insert themselves in a dance, or hey, you, me, sex.
How do you like this one? Hey, you, me,
you,
sex.
You, me, sex.
Hey, you, me, sex. Now that sounds...
use full words.
Now that sounds primal. That's like Tarzan. Mm. Or Tonto.
Yeah, Tonto.
Tonto. Mm. Mm. You, me, sex. What? That this gener- their the attack is very aggressive, and they just don't...
I was at a club once where I saw a guy just walk up and start kissing a girl, and they weren't together. He just walked up. They were both drunk still. I mean, I'm... sure, that played a role in it, and they were both fairly attractive, so I'm sure neither of them cared, but he just approached her and started making out with her.
Does she talk in that book, Tom, anything about generations or social, you know, behavior, you
well,
know,
yeah.
now compared
she,
to
the now, let me preface this. I read the female brain first, and she wrote that first also, and then she came out with the male brain, that's what we're talking about tonight. But by the way, I totally recommend the female brain for any guy that wants to know anything about women, and not just how to, you know, score, or just really to, if you're serious about women, you ought to read the female brain. But she, on the subject of what Jeremy is talking about, or on that topic, she would be saying, It's women, what they're looking for in a guy is a protector and a provider. But that's for the guy that they want to settle down with, and so on and so forth. But this one statistic in the female brain that just blew me away, 1 out of 10 pregnancies, she says, 1 out of 10 pregnancies in the United States is from a guy who is not the mate. So they, women, she's, and she was saying, women definitely have their sexual desires, but it takes second rung to, you know, finding the provider for the best father, the best provider, the best for her children.
The contemporary movie, Knocked Up. You've seen Knocked Up? You've seen
it? Yeah, I did.
I guess that tells a lot. That tells the story of, right, a man and woman who just have no plans together and don't even whatever, and then they wind up in this situation. Of course, it has dramatic qualities to its, you know, to how it continues. But I guess that's a replica of what happens. Is that accurate?
And that's a pretty accurate interpretation of the current way how it happens.
See, when we were kids, or even teenagers, and even when everything was legal, Tom and I, and Tom, you tell me if I'm wrong here. I don't remember it, or I fell into a coma somewhere along the way. But the girls were not were never anxious to tell you or to display. Most girls were not quick to display the fact that they just wanted to have sex tonight, right?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Even if they did, and the ones who did were everybody had branded. You know, it's like, hey, there's an Alistair slut down there. You know, it's going.
Yeah.
On. Right.
Yeah.
There was these categories, but there were still women, girls who wanted to have some kind of sex, but they didn't. They weren't as accepting as it seems today, because there were, and what I'm saying is that there are girls out there saying, "All right, well, me and my girlfriends are going to go out tonight, and maybe we'll get laid." That's like, wow.
Yeah.
Wait, you know, they're not. It's not happening. It didn't happen. They didn't say it. We didn't know at all.
Yeah, unless we were such losers.
No, that was not the case, and you know it, because we had other things on our side, especially being musicians, and
big attraction.
I think partly subconsciously
I think partly why we were musicians was to have some sort of a status that would attract girls.
Oh, that's how it started. Sure, entirely. Absolutely. I know how it started with me. We're here with Tom Savino, and Jeremy Long's along here with us. He got here late because he fell asleep. And that's okay. We had this Savino-Cotolo Chronicles right here at on this this show that we do here every week. And Tom comes to us courtesy of the state of California at an undisclosed location. And we're talking about the male brain on, what are we slating it, 19th of September. God, September's almost over. It's nuts. So... okay, so anything go on now with the, in the last half hour here? What about the book? Haven't we covered what about the brain? Haven't we covered you now? Because I wanted to get into the aspect that of course these days of course it's so open. We don't just have, I mean, we have homosexuality. Of course, is you know out. It's not. You know, we're not hanging people anymore and whatever. And, you know, all this stuff has changed and people, and the gay marriage and an open, yeah. open transgender community, all the stuff that's going on. How does that fit into a brain, a male brain, male brain? Because a male and a male, in other words, definitively what she's talking about, it would be better if a man was with a man. Just two male brains should be able to get along better based on this stuff. Not, and we don't going into psychological and emotional, right? Shouldn't a male and a male even? But what happens once they're romantically inclined? It all changes, or emotions blow up their brains, or they're not male, or does one have more of a female brain and think like a female? How does this work?
I have an admission here, and that is I didn't read the entire book yet. But
wow,
she does talk in the female brain. She does talk a little bit about homosexuality, and how that relates to the wiring and the various hormones that affect the behavior, and. From just reading the beginning of the male brain, she talks about a hormone, I think it's called vasopressin, that after reading that section, I thought, gee, I bet you if a male doesn't have too much of that hormone, he is probably more likely to be a homosexual based on what she was saying about what it does and so on. It during a certain formative years she used the term masculinizes the guy. And will be more, more this, more prone to follow moving objects, more prone to throw objects, more prone to be protective, more prone to, becomes that masculinized, the epitome of masculinization.
So maybe this really isn't an issue with the brain because I'm just saying that, all things being equal, which they're not, that's the point. All things being equal, what she's saying is that women communicate with women better because they have the same brains, and men communicate with men better because they have the same brains. The problem comes when the male brain meets the female brain. That's where the problem of communication.
Yes,
you see what I'm saying?
I think she would agree with that statement.
So sex entering the picture really doesn't have any, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we're just dealing with, what I'm trying to say is everything she's talking about, is it just, even though you didn't read the rest of the book, is this just a heterosexual,
it's
time for a heterosexual theater starring. Is this just a heterosexual theater is what I'm saying, that she's talking about? Look at the chapter titles. Does it say anywhere to the part you didn't read? Does it say in there's this male and male?
Like the table of contents? Ooh, I'm only an English teacher.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, does she get into male, or does it just male, female, or what? I don't know.
The brain below the belt, the daddy brain, manhood, the emotional lives of men, the mature male, the future of the male brain. Oh, yeah. Look at this. There's a whole appendix here called the male brain and sexual orientation. Okay,
so there you go. See? So she does address it. How could you not address it in a contemporary book, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then, so we know that there's we can't tell you everything about this book anyway. You'd have to go out and buy it or get it, and we're not promoting it. If you want to get it, don't get it. Go to the library, get it for free. We don't promote books here. They don't give us any kickback. We're not using that book loss leader.
Yeah.
It's just the way that this is just the book. He decided to use this book for this.
Yeah, which is the basis of this discussion, and it's also a good paperweight.
Man, this is definitely men talking, though, isn't it? How do you feel about this? Look, Tom, I wonder how you really feel about this. How do you feel? But how do you feel about this book? No, let me ask you. We don't have to be personal because we don't do personal stuff here anyway. We've never done personal. But the thing is, just in general, how do you feel? You read the book. And you're a male. Now, you said you learned maybe a lot by reading her interpretation and her female brain. How did you feel reading this? Did you go, oh, God, is that me? Or did you go like, yeah, okay, or what? Do you identify at all with what she says is your brain?
Absolutely. You did this little disclaimer. We don't get personal here. But I'm going to get a little personal here. As I mentioned to you privately, that I have recently started taking testosterone, like almost a year now. I've been testosterone.
Wait, hold on 1 second. I have to. Nobody knows this, and I just. But why is this some kind of artistic framing? Why is a saxophone on the wall behind you on a stand? What is a saxophone doing? Is this some kind of artistic framing? Did you do this? What?
No.
There's a saxophone.
That's just where he keeps his saxophone.
That's where I keep my saxophone. Everything has to be somewhere.
Everything. I had no idea that, I mean, for all these years, and I know you, I didn't know anything
you
about
didn't know
a saxophone. No.
All right. I definitely tinker with the saxophone.
I know the flute because you've always played around with the flute. Speaking of that.
Yeah, well, I like.
And I don't mean that in a male brain funny way.
The saxophone is definitely more masculine.
Saxophone is an instrument that plays such beautiful music. It's good for picking up women.
So you should.
Yeah, so I found that with the flute, I didn't get many women.
You pick up men with the flute. The saxophone. So. Okay, so there. Okay, I'm sorry.
For me,
it just threw me off because of the frame. If people could see you, your frame isn't he framed exactly? Come on, you're a director. He framed it. He's leaning to the right, and then there's a big white wall. And it's like if we were gonna shoot him.
He may have moved it over a couple inches in order to get it.
That's funny. To me, it was just weird. Okay.
I didn't consciously do that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. This is male.
Maybe
guys.
He's subconscious.
Yeah.
Huh? He's like, I'm going to be Skyping some women later. Let me move my saxophone over a couple inches.
Sax, isn't it? Sax and the single man.
Do you play the sax? Oh, how do you know?
Is that a baritone or a tenor sax? What is it?
That's a tenor.
It's a tenor. Tenor 11. I don't know. Something like that.
Interesting you should bring up the saxophone because, as you can see, you're right behind me.
I know.
All right. How did you know? Oh, well, you see it behind.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I play it a little.
The way it's framed, I know.
Then you have to add coin.
No, Tom had a penchant for learning a little bit about every instrument.
Yeah, Jack, the jack of all trades and master of none, I've been called. Yeah,
not that I ever really studied. I never really studied music, but there's certain things that, and I learned a lot of piano because he already knew piano, okay. But Tom would do that. Tom would look at a zither and pick it up, and he would be able to, like, he could do one song on a zither and, you know, two on a sax yeah. and three on a flute. And, yeah. and then three on a flute. That's the name of my new book. That's a man got a play coming out now. Three on a flute yeah. by Frank Cotolo. Get on down to the Courageous Theater and see that. Now, where were you, Tom, before?
Tom was opening up his heart to us about his testosterone.
I know. He's opening up his heart about yeah. And I just went
about his saxophone.
Right to the sax. Go ahead. You know me. It's all sax with me. Go ahead.
Well, since I've been taking this supplement, you know.
Did you see the stuff? Did you see the testosterone now? It's like underarm deodorant? Did you see that?
Yes.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. So what do you do? What do you take?
I rub on my shoulders. And
I don't know why that's funny. I don't know why that's
funny. I have no idea.
When? In the morning or between meals or what? What do you do?
During meals.
What do you do?
When you're done with your meatloaf, you rub it all over.
In the morning.
When we rise. You rub. You get up. Brush your teeth. And then
exactly.
rub.
In that order.
Does it have a fragrance? Is it like white shoulders?
No. It's white shoulders. White shoulders for men.
And then he puts on testosterone, and then he goes and plays a little sax. Next thing you know, it's time for breakfast. The day just flies by.
Now, do you put on the testosterone before the shower or after? Would the shower wash off the testosterone?
Oh, yeah. Yes. How long does it take to permeate?
If you put it on, you shouldn't shower for 5 hours. So, you, of course, put it on right after your shower.
It doesn't smell, though.
No, there's no smell. Okay, it's got a little bit of like an alcohol smell. I think there's probably a little alcohol in it.
But everyone who knows you is used to that anyway. Because, okay, go on and tell us what you were saying about testosterone.
Oh, well, because of I've been taking the supplement since October last year, and it like immediately had an impact on me, and like my sex drive was back, you know.
So 5 hours later after you first took it, you were humping your saxophone? Is that
it
or what?
Maybe 12 hours. 12 hours later, it's like, 12? Whoa.
Really?
I remember this.
So you had lost a certain connection with that.
Yeah.
Fit sensation.
So, but it testosterone for the male brain, the male brain is actually marinated in testosterone. From birth to year one, we are marinated. The brain is marinated in testosterone. And because of that, no matter how long we live, and, you know, we really weren't meant to live more than our 40s, but because of, you know, technology, medical science, we will still, you know, see a woman and follow her, especially if she's moving.
As most women tend to do. Otherwise,
especially the young ones.
Or we could just look in department store windows. Those stationary ladies with all those wonderful clothes that they wear. And not like that.
But a moving woman is irresistible.
The more animated, the better, I say. What's on the AMM? That's right, the animated, no, AWM, the annual animated women movement. I was starting.
The animated
so go ahead.
But besides the obvious, the sexual drive was back, all these other traits that she talks about in the book came back too, like this.
Right.
I have to, you know, if I start a project, I have to finish, and if I'm driven, goal driven. I have to do this, and I got to do that, and I got to fix things. You know, if there's nothing to fix, I'll break it just so I can fix it and be on task to do it. And I'll do this, you know.
Every time you get these books and you talk about these things, it's kind of like when I have Dr. Popoli on and I have some, you know, I feel seriously ill. But go ahead. So then all these other sensations came back. I didn't even know what it's like to lose them because I never had them. I don't want to fix anything. I don't really want to, but I know what you mean in terms of.
I can't say that on the air.
No, no. In terms of community.
Send you something, a gift.
You can. Do you know, we did this. No, we did this once before. I did this on a show. I said that this town is so small, this town that, that you could send a letter or a package that says Cotolo, Granville, Pennsylvania. No address, no zip code, and it gets to me.
And did it really?
Yes, and someone and a couple of people tried it, and I got these letters. And if they'd have put return addresses, I'd have known who sent them. And some were written in blood and crayon. No, so there were these. So you found yourself.
Now you said, like, do I relate to what she's saying in the book?
Yes. Yeah.
And now I especially relate to it that I've, you know, got this testosterone back in my system. Because that's the number one the number one hormone in us is this testosterone, and it deals with tasks, and you know I have to complete this and I have to fix that, and it's all these things that I had not, you know, it's kind of filtered out of my life with the low testosterone. Mm. I wasn't even aware of it until I took the testosterone, you know, that
you weren't fixing things, you weren't drive, you didn't have the drive, you weren't aware that you didn't have the drive, or you just felt it more strongly?
I really wasn't aware of it. You know, it was just like kind of a mood thing. It was like, who wants, I had no motivation, no nothing.
And testosterone is the driving, the fluid of that, that's the source of that.
It is. So our three main hormones are testosterone, definitely, vasopressin, and dopamine.
Oh yeah, dopamine. Oh yeah, I love that stuff. Yeah. That's the good stuff. The dopamine.
Yeah.
You call the dope in me. I want to satisfy the dope in me. The dope in me. I take certain meds. And I find them, just part of my life now. They're just terrific. And yet, I don't, I miss them. I don't miss them in terms of doing things. That's the funny thing about it. I don't have these. I know we're not getting personal here, but I mean, I don't. I just don't. So I don't know what you're. I've gone through what you've gone through, and mm-hmm. I don't. But I wish you the best.
Are you showing me the door?
No.
I mean,
no,
I'll show you the door.
No.
There.
No, I know. I see the door.
Right next to my saxophone.
Right next to the sax. I'll show you the door. No, not at all. We're not done here. We're with the Cotolo Chronicles, and we're in the last at least 10 minutes of this. We're talking about the male brain and various things about the male brain and other things about the male brain. And we want to remind you all, let me say, since we Tom always comes right into the top of the show, right into this other stuff. So let's do this real quickly so we could just slide out of here. And that is that what? I don't know what's happening next week, by the way, so we'll figure that out. There's nothing scheduled for next week, but Heather Drain will be here on the first week, Thursday of October, and we'll be talking about all things Dracula. And I'm not going to do the joke on that. So, I mean, the old things Dracula, that'll be Thursday after that. And then, I think Dr. Woldar is coming on again because there's all sorts of stuff going on out there in the universe. Voyager's left the heliosphere, and I don't even know we had a heliosphere. I thought we just had a solar system with some kind of sphere. Everything out there is round. Not everything out there is round. You see what I'm saying? But anyway. And then Dr. Pope will be back, and all sorts of stuff happening in October coming up through into whenever it is we do as we move into the end of Y2K plus 13. And Tom will be back, of course, sometime in October. God knows what we'll be talking about then. Probably another half-read book is.
I thought we were talking about the female brain then.
Didn't we do that? No, what did we talk about?
We talked about the animals.
Oh, animals, male, and then we're going to talk about the female brain.
We don't have to, because actually, if you think about it, I mean, we're kind of talking about both now, but if you want to do something else.
I don't think we should talk about the female brain, unless we have a female here. because of somewhere. Yeah, so we could go. Yeah, I know that. He is a German. Goes, well, I can take care of that.
Well, yeah, I was going
to
say.
I'll just walk up to somebody.
No hope for Frank and I.
Jeremy goes, well, when I'm doing stand-up, I'll just walk up to some girl, stick my tongue in her mouth, and give her some of my testosterone and say, you want to be on radio? Next thing you know, she's here.
Just give her some of that.
That didn't work for us. When you're on radio, we used to do that,
too. I'll bring my saxophone, and I'll play that for a couple of lines, and I'll spit in her face.
Now, this is a very man thing to do, too, isn't it? We take serious situations, and we just toss it around like we're drunken fools. Right?
Yeah.
This is a very male thing. Women would talk, and they would discuss this stuff. And we, you know.
Yeah, I wore a hypnotist, not a friend of mine, but just an acquaintance I know through Google. What is it?
Google. Go ahead. What about her?
Well, she said, "Oh, you're going to be talking about the male brain." And I wrote back to her and I says, "Yes, but keep in mind, this is a comedy show, basically." And we will be talking seriously about the subject, but
well, this is like, you know, this is really not a comedy show. It's not a comedy show. It just has comedy. We address things that other shows don't address, and we just happen to find them all funny. That's a different story. That's just part of our attitude and how we look at it, because we don't take things seriously. But in essence, I've always been accused, and Tom will tell you this, he'll verify this. They go like, well, when is he serious? And, you know, they say, are you serious? I can't, if I had a nickel for every time someone said, are you serious? Cause they don't, you know, when are you joking, when are you not joking? I didn't know I was that good an actor. Okay. And so I've decided to say, look, I'm always serious. So even if you're hearing something funny, I'm serious about it. So if I tell you to go screw yourself, I'm serious. If I tell you that you got a lot, I'm serious.
I guess I should have said it's not going to be like a scholarly discussion.
Even when I have scholars on, it's not a scholarly discussion because I'm here. And everyone knows that I grew up stupid. And everyone knows that. And they've heard this story over and over again. But what else? In the closing 7 minutes we have here, what do you got on this? Is that it for the book? Is that it for our brains? Are we done? Are we finished?
Well,
are we toast?
We could be done.
What is the story?
I mean, there's more to it if you want.
Give us a conclusive thing about the male brain that everyone should know. Maybe they don't or won't identify.
Well, there was one thing that, as a high school teacher, and I'm with teenagers, teenage boys will see, they will look at a neutral face, a face that does not show any particular expression one way or the other, like not threatening. Let's use the terms threatening and not threatening and neutral, all right, or threatening, friendly, and neutral.
Okay.
They will look at neutral faces, and they will see a threat. This is according to her research, you know, and it's shed light about like how some reactions I've gotten from boys in class. Like if I just mention something to them, it's like defensiveness right away. You know, I think they do grow out of it. They don't, you know, in their 20s, they start to grow out of that. But males generally are more, we tend to like be on the defensive side. I guess it's part of being the protector of being genetically wired to be the protector, the guardian. We will just not trust, you know, if a person even has a neutral face, we will just tend to not trust that and be on guard. We're on guard.
Testosterone, then, in a sense, this particular hormone, like you said, really keeps us moving, keeps us active, keeps us. It's kind of like an armor.
It is. You know, I talked about the positive, at least for me, the positive benefits of the testosterone. But this is like a negative thing. Since I've been on it too, it's like I've been way more defensive, and like, you know, I have to be careful, like driving, because, you know, I got to be mindful of road rage and say, as soon as I feel that son of a gun, I have to be aware of that and not escalate that, you know, in a violent way, to be aware that I'm, you know, I've been pretty successful at that because of the meditation training. It's like, oh, there's that part of me. I don't want to, fuel it right now. That's just the testosterone acting.
So it drives us, to do very, and then we call masculine because we're very masculine things, defensive things, aggressive things.
Yes.
On all planes, aggressive on all levels. It would be aggressive sexually, aggressive, in terms of protecting ourselves. But it just seems like we protect ourselves from, well, I guess testosterone out of control is what? What is testosterone? What is it? Maybe that was my problem. Maybe I've always had testosterone out of control. Maybe that's my problem. Have any anti-testosterone? I don't know.
You should get a blood test.
I've had many. What about
test your testosterone?
Well, they never told me I didn't have enough.
Okay. So I guess they would. I mean, yeah. if they would. They should have said, "Hey, it's low." Or,
well, do
God,
people,
are you the Incredible Hulk or something?
Yeah. Well, do people who are extremely aggressive or violent, do they have more men? Do men have more testosterone than? You don't know this either. You're not a doctor, and you don't even play one on the radio either.
Do men have this. More testosterone?
No, no. Violent men have more testosterone.
Oh, I think she mentions that. I think somewhere she mentions that, and I think yes.
And you must remember too that there's a certain contingent of men being sexual with one another that is violent. It's much different than. Did you ever see the movie? What was that movie? Al Pacino, Cruisin'. Did you ever see Cruisin'?
Yeah.
I mean, that really brings out the violent side of man's sexuality when it's man and man. It's not this. It's nowhere near what it's like with man and woman. So even that is different. Wow, we're really screwed up, aren't we?
Yeah. You know, a lot of these problems. They don't have to be problems, but a lot of the things that causes problems is that we have, you know, we're not, I don't think we were designed to be in this kind of society with all these, you know, mixed cultures, mixed philosophies.
Tribal.
Meant to be tribal.
Yeah. More tribal, more individual. Like maybe that's why even in cities, why you know, you grow up and there's neighborhoods, there's different cultures from block to block and things and stuff like that. No, you wouldn't understand. Don't look at me like that, Jeremy. You don't understand any of this. You're part of the. You're not a millennial. Are you?
I don't know.
Millennium or millennial or whatever. I don't know either. I have no idea what's going on with you. Facebook and Twitter, where you can get all of us. And boy, after this show, you sure as heck want to connect with us and get our various tweets and tweets and twinkles.
Friend me on Facebook. I will reply. Me, you, sex.
To me, you, sex. Jeremy, yeah. Jeremy Long, MD. No, that's your Twitter.
Facebook's just my name.
It's just his name, Jeremy Long. Tom Savino. You're not on Facebook.
I do not have Facebook.
Wow, one of the rare people.
I will not. I refuse. But I do have a Twitter. I'm a TJ Savino at Twitter.
It's too bad you're not on Facebook because I have every once in a while I get the urge to bully you.
Well, it must be testosterone.
It must be. You can poke him.
I could poke you. That's right. We could do the hokey pokey. Remember that last? Oh, you weren't there last week, huh? We were trying to figure out what is the hokey pokey. Is it the fingers? Or we'll talk about that
put
a whole
right
other time.
Foot in, put your right
well, that's,
foot out.
Yeah, but that's not the hokey pokey. Put your right foot in, put your right foot out, put your right foot in, shake it all about, and then you do the hokey pokey. What's the hokey pokey? Is that the thing with the fingers going up and down? We don't know, see? The people don't question these things. I do. It drives me nuts. this stuff drives me nuts. I don't know. I just know. Who's that?
That's Gattone over there. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's that time. It's that time, kids. It's time to be wiping up the floor and putting the stuff back on the shelves. See how quickly it goes?
I only came halfway.
Yeah, well, we're the lucky ones. Me and Tom have been here for 2 hours. Tom, thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome.
And
look forward to being here next month.
Let's stay in touch, and we'll have you back again in October sometime, right? And we'll be there with Tom Savino, T.S. Savino at Twitter.
T.J. Savino.
T.J. Savino at Twitter. I'm on the same pot. You see, his voice is on the same pot. If I put that louder, I just want to say exactly what, I want to say this to you and go out there now. Everybody, remember, you be good. See you tomorrow. I love you.
Who said that?
In memory of Alex, the world's smartest parrot. Yeah. Good night, Mrs. Ernst Weil, wherever you are. Go with us. Get us on get us all the places you get us. Social network us. Do what you got to do and stay with us. We'll be around. If you want to hang in there, Tom, we'll finish this up and we can talk a little. We're all here. Unless you got to go. I don't know. We're going to go right now. So, okay. I'll tell you what. We'll leave you right now because I have nothing more to say.
到冰球，小村到大市，咸湿屋仔到咸湿中心，是 Cthulhu Chronicles。